Our next presenter is María Amparo Casa, Centro de Investigación y Ofensia Económica.
Eduardo, can I take your 3 minutes?
If the panelists would like to sit here to look at the screen more comfortably. Are you okay?
Yeah.
Mark, would you like to?
Yeah. Okay. Hi, and thank you to Moira, Tom, for inviting us to this splendid seminar. What I want to do in this paper is not very different from what Eduardo has been talking about in the case of Chile. But what I do in the paper is first assess whether there are empirical grounds to endorse the thesis that the outcome of plurality and of divided governments in Mexico since 1997, has been that of paralysis and of legislative failure. Second, to review the discussion on whether legislative failure or supposed legislative failure is the inevitable fate of divided government and or of minoritarian presidents. And finally, to examine the alternatives that are being posed in Mexico by different actors in the current discussion of political reform in Mexico and their probable consequences. Well, the appearance of divided government very late in Mexico, I mean, if we compare it to Latin America, that happened while the PRI was still in government, and the recurrence of this phenomenon for the last five legislatures, since 1997 we have had five divided governments in a row, have caused wide concern in Mexico regarding the capacity of the Mexican political system to process policy decisions. For some time now, there is an extended and a very growing perception, or an increasingly growing perception in Mexico, that since the advent of democracy and the plurality in Congress that it came about, or as a consequence of the advent of democracy, the Mexican political system has fallen into a sort of stalemate, and that this stalemate has precluded the passing of reforms that are deemed necessary in Mexico. In fact, the poor performance of the economy in Mexico has been blamed on the absence of structural reforms, and the absence of structural reforms has been blamed on the divided government, to say it just in a nutshell. Most these views are dominant both in the political arena and in the academic world, and most parties and the executive have unmistakably expressed that the Mexican presidential system is kind of worn out or depleted. They say that it has been agotado in Spanish. So the closest concept I found in English is depleted, and it's in need of being refurbished. So let me go into a few data, a quick review of congressional data before addressing the question of the current discussion on representativeness versus efficiency in the case of the Mexican political reform proposals. Things have certainly changed since the demise of the PRI as the hegemonic party, then the dominant party, and now a minority party. Well, that's the evolution of the president's party majority. And it became a minority afterwards and opposition since 1970 up until now. This 2009 began the last legislature, when as a result of a number of electoral reforms, Mexico moves from a single party regime into a dominant party and then into a stable three-party system. The decision-making process certainly became far more complex. That's the Chamber of Deputies. That's the Senate, as you see. Beginning in 2000, the president, or in 1997, the president's party lost its majorities. Yes, so the decision-making process became much more complex and much more cumbersome. Parties became real players for the first time, and as in any other democratic polity, the system kind of began to require negotiation and compromise within Congress and between the executive and Congress. But it also became more complex, not only because of the plurality of Congress, but also because a number of other political actors that had practically no saying in the heyday of the PRI became crucial. Party leaders, governors, justices, as Julio will, will tell you, and also members of the growing number of autonomous parties. And what happened in Congress was the executive has never been the main or the major bill initiator. However, the number of bills, as I am showing in this table, presented by actors different from the executive has soared since plurality came about. There has been a marked change in the number of bills presented by parties in Congress, rising from 55% in the 1982-85 period to a striking 99% in the last legislature. In absolute numbers, as you see, the executive passed from sponsoring 139 bills, that's 45% of them, in 1982 to just 1% in 2006-2009. Second, the approval rate of executive bills has diminished, although it is, I believe it is still high for a divided government. From 1940 to 1970, no executive bill was defeated on the floor. In the period 82-88, when the PRI was still the dominant party and firmly in control of the legislative agenda, the success rate of executive bills was 97%, and thereafter it started to decrease. During the last four legislatures, all of them with no party majority, the success rate was, on average, 73%. Well, those are the bills introduced by the executive, approved, pending, rejected, and the percentage. As I say, on average, is 73% for the last four legislatures. Thus, I believe that although the approval... although the approval rate of executive-initiated bills has undoubtedly gone down, the idea of a systematic opposition to executive bills does not find a sound empirical basis. Moreover, I would say that contrary to this view, floor voting analysis shows that most of them are passed with broad coalitions that include the three major parties. Here, what I show is all-party coalition, that means the eight parties in the Chamber of Deputies, executive versus all other sponsors, that means mainly legislators or parties in Congress or local legislatures. As you see, coalitions formed for all floor votes on approved bills, on average 58% of them were approved through coalitions that included members of all parties represented in Congress, an average of eight parties in Congress. But if we move to, I mean, if we exclude the small parties in the Mexican Congress and we stay with the PRI, PAN, and PRD, the three major parties, the ones that explain 90% of members of Congress, you will see that the average goes up. Floor coalitions of the three major parties were formed on average 71% of the time, and floor coalitions for the three major parties for executive bills was again on average 55%. In fact, the most frequent coalition in Congress for bills that reach the floor in Mexico, regardless of its origin, is that formed by the three largest parties in Congress. Third, I don't believe that the figures warrant the claim of a paralysis in quantitative terms, neither for constitutional nor for legal reforms. Here I show you a table of constitutional reforms. It's very impressive because in Mexico there is kind of a costumbre, habit of reforming the constitution. But if you see during the last period of PRI dominance, that's 1982-1997, that's five legislatures, Congress passed 41 constitutional reforms involving the amendment of 165 articles of the Constitution. Well, during the last four periods of divided government, Congress passed 82 constitutional reforms involving the amendment of 110 articles. So, I mean, they have been doing some work. I don't know if the right work, but they have been doing some work. I'm aware that these figures constitute only a rough indicator of legislative activity. Among other things, all these figures do not account for the content of bills, for the amendment of the executive bills, or for the executive postponing or withholding altogether controversial legislation out of fear of failure. Nonetheless, they also serve the purpose of questioning the idea of a paralyzed Congress over the now 14 years 14-year period of divided governments in Mexico, important pieces of constitutional and secondary legislation have been passed. Among them, if you see the energy, the pension, the electoral, that was in 2007, the transparency and accountability, the banking, the human rights, the security and justice, and the national security laws. And we have a lot of pending reforms like the fiscal reform, the labor reform, telecommunications, education, political and antitrust, and federalism. Nonetheless, we can really question the idea of a paralyzed country. Numbers and facts do not seem to side with the thesis of paralysis or deadlock. Nonetheless, it is possible to argue that there is a sense in Mexico that plurality has performed far worse than it would have, that there has been a lack of action, or at least a very poor performance in many of the fields that all parties agree are in need in reform, and that since the advent of divided governments, there is more political conflict than political action. So the question is how far the pending reforms have not been approved as a consequence of divided governments. Who or what is to blame? And is the particular arrangement of the Mexican presidential system responsible for the lack of an efficient decision-making process? All these questions, I believe, have no straightforward answers and but still are in need of analysis. Most people in the academic world and most politicians in Mexico turn to the institutional arrangement argument. The first claim I would like to sustain is that divided government can hardly be blamed for the absence of the so-called structural reforms in Mexico. For all those who contend that they have not been able to pass due to the lack of a majority of the present parties or of any other party, one could point out the fact that during the last two decades in which the PRI was still dominant and not in need of any type of coalition, neither the fiscal, nor the pensions, nor the education, nor the energy or fiscal reforms were passed. This fact, I believe, acknowledges one of two things. Either political discourse is little more than demagogic, and parties and presidents were never serious about those reforms that they proposed to the floor, or most likely, apart from parties who are the former players on the congressional arena, there are other players in the game that are weighty and effective enough to hamper reforms. That's the de facto powers, the powers that be the real powers. Second, in relation to who is to be held responsible, some blame the or most actors blame the institutional arrangement, others blame the lack of will and determination, or even the political capabilities on the part of governments. And some others refer to the scanty democratic culture, and yet others, as I was saying, emphasize the growing power of the de facto powers in Mexico. Nonetheless, let me concentrate on the institutional argument if I have some more minutes. I'll wait with different fine points. The dominant view in Mexico, as I was saying, is that we have a faulty institutional arrangement and that the only way out of the supposed paralysis or deficient or unsatisfactory decision-making rules is political reform. For some time now, we have been hearing that if authorities do not collaborate, if policymakers do not agree, and if no party in Congress can gather the majority needed to pass reforms, it is because the system is poorly designed. That is because the system promotes party fragmentation, does not encourage collaboration within Congress and between the branches of power, and because it provides no mechanisms to overcome deadlock. There is certainly in the debate not a word about the fact that the presidential system, regardless of the particular form it assumes, was designed precisely to inhibit or at least to slow the pace of change of the status quo. It has not even been argued that if decisions to change the status quo have not been taken, it is not because of some system failure, but mainly because it has not been in the interest of political forces to do so, as they think that the current situation benefits them and the transformation might hurt them either politically or electorally. In fact, I think it is clear that as soon as the political parties agree on one issue, they will negotiate at once, as was shown by the very controversial electoral reform that was passed on 2007 against precisely the big the broadcast television interests. In addition to the consensus regarding the flaws of the system, parties in Congress agree that there is no other way out but a political reform. But the debate is whether to alter the access to power side of the equation or the structure of power side of the equation, and they have not been able to reach any agreement on this. Following the literature on constitutional change in Latin America, we can note two trends. First, Latin American countries have moved in their constitutional reforms towards multipartism. And second, this trend has been accompanied, I believe, by the strengthening of legislative powers to the executive. The problem is where does Mexico stand? The problem is that political actors in Mexico do not want to reverse the trend of representativeness in Congress. They do not want to alter the electoral formulas, and they do not want to alter also the other side of the equation, the equilibrium of powers. There is great resistance in Mexico to give the president any of the proactive powers that Latin American countries like Brazil, Chile, Argentina have given to their presidents. So what we have is a kind of now a stalemate regarding the political reform. Most parties, except for the president's party, do not want to move the electoral formulas, and all opposition parties are against the president in terms of granting more legislative powers to the Mexican president. This is understandable because we come from seven decades of a very strong presidentialism, but what it is not understood in Mexico is that the strong powers of the presidency in Mexico did not come from its constitutional powers, but from other factors. So we are in this stalemate, and there seems to be no way out. Apparently, the senators are going to discuss during this period the political reforms and its consequences, but the opposition parties do not want to move from the viewpoint of not altering the electoral size, and the other way around. The presidency doesn't want to move the electoral side, and the opposition parties are opposed to moving the equilibrium of powers side. So we are in a stalemate in that sense. It's a bit contradictory, but those are the numbers. Thank you.